Discourse on The End of the Revolution and the Beginning of Independence by Gary Hunt, Outpost of Freedom. Tensions increase September 6th through September 19th. Worcester, Massachusetts, September 6th, 1774. If General Gage were to keep his word and use troops to assure that the courts would open in Worcester County on September 6, the Patriots, especially after the excitement and commitment demonstrated during the powder alarm, were ready to assure that the courts would not open. The lines were drawn and the stakes were high. Many of the people who were to be in Worcester must have left their homes on the 4th to assure that they would be present on the 6th. They came from as far away as 35 miles in Royalston, and they came on foot. By Tuesday morning, September 6th, 4,622 men had arrived in Worcester. Ebenezer Parkman's diary provided an account by town of these 4,622 men. Though most of the participants had left home without their firearms, when word came that General Gage was not sending his troops, Gage only had 3,000 troops in garrison, most of the rifles were stored at homes outside of Worcester or with homes or businesses in town. Staves became the weapon of choice and music was played by fife and drum. Only a few men still had arms. Most of the men from Worcester and Spencer had barricaded themselves inside of the courthouse by 10 o'clock to prevent the judges and other officials from entering. Representatives from each of the various town committees met at the home of Timothy Biglow to coordinate the activities of the day. Their first decision, however, was to attend the body of the people outside, leaving the decision not to the leaders, but to the people themselves. Meanwhile, a local merchant did a phenomenal business. More than ever before, on Sunday he took in 173 pounds for powder and etc., on Monday 97 pounds, and on Tuesday 300 pounds, as thousands of militiamen prepared for what might come. The officers of the court, three judges of the inferior court and eight justices of the peace, two attorneys and the sheriffs, having been locked out of the courthouse, had taken up at Daniel Haywood's Tavern to await communication from the committee. Their first effort at a statement used the term "would endeavor" and etc. was too weak for those who had traveled so far. The second document, signed by all 25 officers, is as follows. Gentlemen, you have desired and even insisted upon it that all judicial proceedings be stayed by the justices of the court appointed this day, by law, to be held at Worcester on account of the unconstitutional act of the British Parliament respecting the administration of justice in this province, which, if effected, will reduce the inhabitants thereof to mere arbitrary power. We do assure you that we will stay all such judicial proceedings of said court and will not endeavor to put said act into execution. Sufficient to satisfy those who had attended to the courts that the courts remain closed, the next act was to require all of the justices to walk the line between all of those gathered, with hats in hand, reading over and over. Some estimates were that the statement was read by each 30 times. Their statement, so that all could hear, and as a final affront to the Tories, all known Tories in town were required to march with the justices. The British troops had stayed away, no blood had been shed, and all of the goals of the Patriots had been achieved. There was no doubt as to who was in control of Worcester County. Worcester, Massachusetts, September 7th, 1774. Having dealt with the problem of the judges in the court, the people of Worcester were left without a formal government nor with a way to deal with the problems that might arise. A provincial convention had been called for on the second Tuesday of October, less than 2 months away. In the meantime, an interim government was needed. The county convention that had convened to deal with not allowing the seating of the courts took matters into their own hands, defiant of any British objections to the contrary. They recalled the justices of the peace who were in office under the original charter, with the exception of those who had proven inimical to their cause. They allowed them to sit as single judges, though not to sit as a court, and they were only to deal with criminal, not civil cases. The coroners, sheriffs, and probate judges would also continue in office. The most significant authority presumed by the convention was to require resignation from all of the militia officers. Often, however, if the old officer was a patriot, he would be returned to duty. They procured at least one field piece with mount and fitted for use and sufficient ammunition for same. They were prepared to defend what they had gained. Boston, Massachusetts, September 6th through 12th, 1774. General Gage, having seen the strength of the patriots by the closure of the courts, the resignations, the failure to stop the town meeting in Salem, and the resignation of his lieutenant governor, Thomas Oliver, was determined to regain control in the colony. His first step was to fortify the Boston Neck, a narrow piece of land connecting Boston to the mainland. He had only 3,000 soldiers, and the patriot forces outnumbered them substantially. He had to protect his garrison. According to John Andrew, the alarms caused by the movement of the country has induced the governor to order a number of field pieces up to the Neck Guard, and this morning has got a number of workmen there to build a blockhouse and other ways repair the fortification. It was reported that he was going to cut a canal across and break off communication with the country other than by bridge, in consequence of which the selectmen waited upon him. He assured them he had no intention to break ground, but it was only about securing the entrance to the town, that the inhabitants as well as the soldiers may not be exposed to inroads from the country. The patriots in Boston were worried that General Gage was going to make a garrison of the whole town. They were also concerned that the guarding of the Neck and the passively detaining the few who went from country to town might discourage the flow of goods necessary from the country to sustain life in Boston, under embargo because of the port bill. Andrews also provided some insight into the additional precautions that General Gage was making to avoid being attacked by the patriots, who outnumbered his forces. Andrews gave a running account of General Gage's efforts at fortification and the response of the local patriots. September 6th, the townspeople are in general very uneasy and dissatisfied with the governor's fortifying the entrance, so much so they can't get one workman to assist them. They've got an engineer from New York who is trying what he can do with a number of carpenters and masons out of the army. They talk of sending to New York for a number of mechanics to effect it. It is my opinion, if they are wise, they won't come. September 8th. Yesterday, between 1 and 2 o'clock p.m., the general, with a large parade of attendants, took a survey of the skirts of the town, more particularly that part opposite the country shore. To suppose they intend to erect batteries there to prevent any incursion of the country people from that quarter. Having effectually secured the Neck by the disposition of the field pieces, and their caution extends so far as to have a guard patrol Roxbury streets at all hours of the night, as well as another posted at Charleston Ferry every night after the evening gun fires. September 9th. Notwithstanding the 6 field pieces planted at Jeannette, they have brought 12 cannon from the castle, some 9 and some 4-pounders, which they have disposed about the entrance of the town. And this is not the only proof of their fear, for I am well informed that they keep so many and such strict guards of nights that the soldiers don't get but one undisturbed night's sleep out of 4. September 10th. They have drawn off the whole of the troops from Salem and the Board of Commissioners, with the governor's family and furniture, all arrived here, not thinking themselves secure in a town surrounded by the country as that is. September 12th, the general has set about 200 soldiers to work upon the fortification this morning. Many of the inhabitants are serious about leaving the town, as they are in general apprehension that when the governor has sufficiently fortified it, military law will be declared and no one suffered to go out but by his permission, notwithstanding what he may have said to the contrary. There is no knowing, Bill, what may take place with us. For my own part, I endeavor to make myself as easy as I can. But if I should come to disarming the inhabitants, the matter is settled with the town at once, for blood and carnage must inevitably ensue, which, God forbid, should ever take place. Charleston, Massachusetts, September 15th, 1774. Again, John Andrew provides some insight into the Patriots' efforts to assure that they were well armed. Ever since ye cannon were taken away from Charleston, the general has ordered a double guard to ye new and old gun houses where ye brass field pieces belonging to our militia are lodged, notwithstanding which the vigilance and temerity of our people has entirely disconcerted him. For Wednesday evening, or rather night, they took these from the old house by opening the side of the house and carried away through Frank Johnnut's garden, upon which he gave it in orders the next day to the officers on guard to remove those from the new house, which stands directly opposite the encampment of the 4th Regiment and in the middle of the street near the large elm tree. Sometime the next night, into the camp, and to place a guard at each end, or rather at both doors, till then. At a fixed hour, the officers went with a number of mattresses to execute his orders, but behold, the guns were gone. He swore the devil must have helped them get it away. However, they went to work and brought off the carriages, harnesses, utensils, and etc., which they reposited in the camps. It is amazing to me how our people managed to carry off the guns, as they weigh near 700 weight apiece, more especially that they should do it and not alarm the guards. A brief explanation of that occurrence: the cannon were stored in a long building with doors on each end. The guards were placed at the end, but the Patriots managed to open the side of the barn, take the pieces out, take them away, and surprise everybody. There is little doubt that the Patriots were preparing for war. Their deeds were not light. Their preparations were for war. General Gage was becoming very concerned over these events. In a letter to Lord Dartmouth, "Nothing less than conquest of almost all of New England provinces will procure obedience to the late acts of Parliament for regulating the government of the Massachusetts Bay. The country people are exercising in arms in this province, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and getting magazines of arms and ammunition in the country, and such artillery as they can procure, good and bad. They threaten to attack the troops in Boston and are very angry at the work throwing up at the entrance to the town. Had the measures for regulating the government been adopted 7 years ago, they would have been easier executed. But the executive parts of government have gradually been growing weaker from about that period, and the people more lawless and seditious. My first object was to give it force, in which I hope to have made some progress. When the arrival of the late acts overset the whole, and the flame blazed out in all parts at once beyond the conception of everybody." The well-laid plans of the British Empire had been put aside by the Patriots that believe that government has an obligation to abide by its contract with the people. And for those who continue to support the Crown, Andrews explains, "The present temper of the people throughout the province is such that they won't suffer a Tory to remain anywhere among them without making an ample recantation of his principles, and those who presume to be so obstinate as to not comply are obliged to take up their residence in this city Boston, of refuge. Braintree, Massachusetts, September 14, 1774. Abigail Adams, wife of John Adams, reports, "The church parson thought they were coming after him and run up the garret, they say. Another jumped out of his windows and hid among the corn, whilst a third crept under his bond fence and told his beads. Weston, Massachusetts, September 14, 1774. Colonel Elijah Jones, 65-year-old father of 14 sons, was humiliated by 300 men who made his mightiness walk through their ranks with his hat off and express his sorrow for past offenses and promise not to be guilty of the like for the future." Concord, Massachusetts. Joseph Lee, a Concord physician, had sought to carry warning to the government on September 1st as the locals prepared to march to Cambridge. Though the force used to elicit the following letter is unknown, on September 19th he signed, though probably did not write, the following: "Whereas I, Joseph Lee of Concord, physician, on the evening of the 1st ultimo, did rashly and without consideration make a private and precipitate journey from Concord to Cambridge to inform Judge Lee that the country was assembling to come down, that he and others concerned might prepare themselves for the event and with an avowed intention to deceive the people, by which the parties assembling might have been exposed to the brutal rage of the soldierly, who had timely notice to have waylaid the roads and fired on them while unarmed and defenseless in the dark, by which imprudent conduct I might have prevented the salutary designs of my countrymen, whose innocent intentions were only to request certain gentlemen sworn into office on the new system of government to resign their offices in order to prevent the operation of that so much detected act of the British Parliament for regulating the civil government of the Massachusetts Bay, by all of which I have justly drawn upon me the displeasure of my country. When I coolly reflect on my own impudence, it fills my mind with the deepest anxiety. I deprecate the resentment of my injured country, humbly confess my errors, and implore the forgiveness of all generous and free people, solemnly declaring that the future, never to convey any intelligence to any of the court party, whether directly or indirectly, by which the design of the people may be frustrated in opposing the barbarous policy of an arbitrary, wicked, and corrupt administration. Signed, Joseph Lee." This ends episode 6.